Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I break your concentration?
What the f*** is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker! Do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination. Hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Welcome back, Stacking Jacks. I'm Tom Al, Mr. Matt Weber, and Mr. Thomas Fall on the board. Thomas back from, used to help us out a while ago, and he's helping us out again. S&P futures up 18, NASDAQ futures up 64, Dow futures up 175. We're buying the dip. We're coming back from yesterday. We were down about the same amount. So we have to buy the dip. We had the president talk last night. We have, all kinds of things happening today. We have Kevin.
You.
Kevin, are you here?
Yeah, I have a feeling that somewhere along the line this morning you'll be able to get Thomas to talk a little bit about the NFL.
It's very possible. You couldn't get me to talk about it because I fell asleep like halfway through the game last night. So.
Well, I didn't make it through. Who won the game?
Tampa Bay evidently in a last-minute drive from Brady for a field goal. Gee, that's new.
It was surgical.
So it was a thriller, and I slept through it. That'll teach him to put a late game on Thursday.
Yeah, just saying. At least the Cubs have gone to 640 starts for the rest of the year instead of 710. So, maybe I'll make the eighth inning for the Cubs. I mean, who knows? But, so are you all fired up for the Irish Toledo pay per view tomorrow?
Yeah, totally fired up. Have you bought your subscription to the Peacock Network yet?
First of all, what is the Peacock Network?
It's live stream. So it's NBC's, It's their streaming service, so you can, you get it over the internet, and they have some content where you just have to have an account, and you don't have to pay anything extra for it, and they have some content like tomorrow's football game that are on the pay part of the Peacock Network, look, I'm not even opening an account. Why would I want to open an account with them? So I'll have to miss the big clash with Toledo.
Yep, it's going to be it's going to be one of those games for the ages, I'm sure. Toledo is
no doubt. Of course, it could be the biggest upset of the year too, I suppose.
What was the one? Michigan? Who'd they lose to the one time? Was it Appalachian State?
Appalachian State, yeah.
And they paid them, what, $250,000 to show up and get their head beat in, but they didn't get their head beat in?
I think they paid them more than that.
This was way back.
Appy State was a good low-level program. Now they've moved up to Division I in a low-level division, 1A type of conference. But now they're big time.
I'm going to I would actually bet you a dollar that was long enough ago that the numbers at the time were in the 250 number. They since have gotten a lot bigger. For the schlump teams, or for the non-competitive teams, for them to play at somebody else's home park one time, I think they're up in a $500,000 number now, at least.
I think many of them are higher. Many of them are up towards $1 million.
But I think this was like one of the first years that they were doing that, and I think they were way lower. I don't know. But
I don't think Michigan's played a 1AA team since. There's not much in it for you there.
No. Well, you get 100,000 people in a place, and you only got to pay the other guys $250,000. That's a number.
Oh, yeah. It's a good arrangement financially. And you sort of expect that you're going to get a scrimmage out of it, where you really, it's just like having a glorified practice.
Kevin, what is the... I'm catching you off guard here, but what do you think the state of the world is regarding... the colleges, most of them are back open to people, even though you never know it by listening to the president talk last night. And I don't want to get started on that because I was so aggravated I couldn't go anywhere. But I just checked for bleeps and grins. There were all kinds of tickets available at FSU for the Irish game. I mean, every section had tickets, and they were pretty close to face, I think. I mean, this is online. So, I assume if you'd have gone down there, of course, I don't know if anybody even has a ticket. By the way, what for the Luddites like me that like to go and get the tickets there, what do you do if you got four tickets now and two people decide they can't go on the last day and you want to sell them outside the stadium? What do you do?
Try to sell them outside the stadium. Good luck. You might get $5-$10 for them.
No, you can. There's so many different ways, Chief. Now you can just get online. There's SeatGeek or something along those lines where you just put out a digital copy. You don't even need a physical copy. Those things are not even really desired anymore when you go into most of those stadiums.
All right, my question is.
Oh yeah, no. Some of the outlets are doing nothing but digital, and you can do. There's ways to do ticket transfers and so on. It used to be in just a couple of years ago that yes, you could go on any of the ticket services, and you could list your tickets on there. In fact, that was real common for people with season tickets or faculty tickets in the case of the colleges, where the faculty would get the tickets but they didn't really want to go, so they'd list them all and make some extra money. Thomas is right that you do have the option to sell your tickets through an online service ahead of time.
All right, the question was, let the record reflect. The question was, I go to the Irish game, Thomas is supposed to come with, he's hungover, he doesn't show up. I get there. We have an extra ticket. You bring somebody who doesn't have a ticket. How do we get that person in the game?
You just go onto an app. I know this is crazy. You get onto an app, you find the game, and there are multiple tickets that are going to be available for sale.
How do I get Kevin your ticket when you don't show up?
You'll just have the digital copy with you. I guess I'm not understanding. It's a fairly simple.
In other words,
Thomas is saying, and I didn't know this, but it doesn't surprise me that there's an app. So you got two people in the parking lot, and one can say, "Who's got a ticket?" and the other can say, "I do."
I can email you.
Here's my point. Thomas is moaning on the sofa. He no longer can give me his ticket and say if somebody wants it, they can have it.
Morning.
I'm just saying it. He can no longer give me his regular old ticket from the Luddite that I am. Me bring it to South Bend with me, and if there's somebody there I want to give it to, I hand it to him. What is the procedure now? I don't have time.
If you are relying on a hard copy ticket and Thomas, and you can't connect with Thomas, you're SOL, my friend.
That's what I'm saying. So unless I have Thomas's phone,
always been the case.
Or I can wake his ass up.
That's nothing with the brave new world.
We've gained something, I guess, but we've lost something as well. I just can't bring the ticket with me. I mean, it's whatever. So now I either need Thomas to wake up. I'd either have him give me his phone and know how to work it. So this used to be very simple, and now it's not. Is my point.
Well, we hope Thomas's hangover isn't so bad that it precludes him operating a smartphone.
I'm
the lightest drinker. Like, I don't really drink that much. The record show.
Well, we're making him out to be.
Yeah, like they're thinking I'm a drunkard who's just like, man, this guy Thomas. Every time he gets up in the morning, you got to drag him out, and he smells like a fifth of Hennessy every time he walks in the door. Like,
but the record reflect that Thomas was waiting for Maddie and I when we got here this morning. So
yeah, well, it's a new world.
What about a guy like me who has no intention of ever getting a ticket on my phone? Do I never get to go anywhere? Which is fine by me, by the way.
You may not have a choice.
Well, I have a choice. I'm just never going to do it.
Yeah. Well.
Why would I? I don't want that on my phone. Give me a ticket. Do I still have the option if I get Cubs or Bears tickets to actually get tickets? I think I do at the Sox.
Yeah, couldn't tell you.
I don't think you do at the Cubs. Anywho,
I'm waiting for Notre Dame to figure out what they want to do for basketball season tickets, and then I'll find out what they have.
All right, so the question was, are these people filling up? Because I imagine those tickets were sold at FSU, but they were really available, Kevin. I mean, any section I wanted, there were like 10, 15 seats
available. They're available everywhere. Notre Dame's got tickets available.
So does that mean instead of 80,000 people there's going to be 70 or 65 or something? Or are they going to find a home?
Could be, but they'll probably try and find a home for as many as they can.
What do you think is the cause of that? Is it I know the Wisconsin game here in Chicago, the Irish-Wisconsin game, I've been hearing from some of my more concerned COVID people. They're not going. Tickets are available. I've gotten probably 5 calls. We got all kinds of tickets. You know, anybody wants to go? And I said, you're not getting me there at 11 in the morning in Soldier Field. So there. Well, my first question is, do you have a skybox and a parking place? And once the answer is no, not that I really care about the skybox, but the parking place. If you said that I had a parking space underneath Soldier Field, I'd go. I have no desire to take the L to Roosevelt Road, walk the mile and a half because they won't let me anywhere closer, and coming out make me walk to Wabash and Adams to get home. Where all the signs that say cabs here, buses here, and they won't let cabs or buses in, but they still have the sign, which I've always kind of wondered about. Just saying. Why do you have a sign that says cabs this way and buses that way when you don't let them in? Yet somebody dutifully brings the sign every game. What am I missing, Kevin?
Don't know what to tell you, Tom. Why do we have the sign there? I don't know. We always have the sign there.
We always have the sign there.
Don't think.
Just do.
To summarize, Chief wants to keep physical tickets to events, and he wants to remove the guy who has the sign outside of Soldier Field.
All I'm saying is if I buy season tickets, I want the option of having the tickets show up to my house. So I actually have them. So if I have somebody at the business that I want to give them to, I can hand them to them.
So, Chief, you're the guy who goes to the restaurant and wants the physical receipt too, right?
I want the physical menu for sure.
You want a physical menu and a physical receipt. Like,
yes.
If someone said, I'll email you the receipt, that is not sufficient for your bookkeeping.
I should be able to go to a restaurant without giving somebody my friggin' email.
Well, and let's back up on the tickets. One thing that I know I've been able to do for a long time with my basketball tickets, even though I had the physical ticket, I had the paper ticket, but if I wanted to do a ticket transfer to you, Tom, all I'd have to do is go online, put in your email address, you'd get an email that comes in and says, I accept the ticket. And the ticket would transfer, and you would get a PDF so that you could print out the ticket if you wanted to, or you could just have the barcode available on your phone. You would have that choice. And then if I were to walk up with my paper ticket, the scanner would reject it.
Makes sense to me. That I can see. That makes sense.
Okay, so that makes sense. Hey, let's seize the moment a little bit. I do want to follow up with your discussion with Lou yesterday about you were talking about transfers.
Yeah.
And, you know, the mechanics of how it works. So, first of all, there's two changes of significance in recent years. One of them goes back a ways, and that's the graduate transfer. That's if you have graduated and then you can transfer without having to sit out a year.
Wasn't it originally, though, and then
you go to grad school. So probably one of the real early ones that was well-known was Russell Wilson going from North Carolina State to Wisconsin for a year.
All right, Kevin, back up a little bit more, though. Wasn't it originally only if the school you were going to had a graduate program that the school you were coming from did not have?
Yeah, and I don't know if that's still the case, but it was originally, and that just isn't hard to do.
What?
You know, every school's got some program that's a little bit unique, or a little, you know, I guess you can't be a little bit unique. Unique is absolute.
Well, when you start talking about,
you know, everybody has some kind of track. You know, I want to do business with data analytics concentration, and this one only has it in the IT department or something like that. There's no problem coming up with something like that. And as a result, if they had any sense, they dropped that requirement because it's too easy to get around.
Well, so, but it's not as simple as, You know, Florida State has an MBA program. Well, so does Notre Dame. So you're saying Florida State has an MBA program with a specific course in whatever, football economics, and Notre Dame doesn't. It's gotten that easy to do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay, what about what about the first question? The second question is, when people have used their 4 years of, I'll use the term scholarship up, say at Notre Dame, now this is going back a ways, so it may not be true, that's why I'm asking the question. I would have had to petition Notre Dame essentially for the fifth year scholarship, for them to pay for my thing, and essentially ask them if they want me to come back for the fifth year, and a lot of times they say no. If they say yes, then can I still transfer?
Yeah, you can still transfer. And that wasn't, you know, Notre Dame always did it a little differently than others, where they said if you wanted the fifth year, you had to have graduated and you'd have to be accepted into their grad school.
And accepted back to the football team to the point where they want to pay for your tuition.
And you had to be accepted back to the football team. Now, most coaches, not all, but most, and I know this from basketball being, around that program a little bit more when I covered them. And, you know, when they say to a guy you're going to sit out as a freshman and you're going on the five-year plan, they will honor the five-year plan no matter what. They won't get to the end of 4 years and go, well, we didn't really mean you're on the five-year plan. You're on the 4-year plan, and if we want you back, then you're on the five. Most of them operate with a certain degree of honor when it comes to that, but that's not all of them.
Now,
some of them will run you off and just tell you, sorry, you're not coming back.
Do all sports, I won't say all the big sports, do they all sort of require / encourage you to show up for summer school? In other words, all the football players try and get them there in June, essentially, right? Now, does that hold true for basketball and hockey and baseball?
Yeah, it does. And unless you're Pat Connett and you sign a minor league baseball contract and then you go away to play minor league baseball.
So this, like, how far down does that go? The volleyball, like the women's basketball, they're all there in the summer?
Women's basketball is, volleyball don't know, rowing team don't know. You know, I don't know where the cutoff is, where it becomes a big deal and where it isn't. So that's all the part one. Something that came up just started a few years ago is what they always call the transfer portal. It's almost like you step into this portal and you come on the other side to some other school.
It was like the Star Trek series.
Yeah, just like Star Trek. Yeah. But what it really means is, and this was to create transparency. You guys were talking yesterday about, you know, the coach get you on the phone, encourage you to transfer. Now, I'm not saying that kind of abuse doesn't happen, but you're not supposed to tamper with anybody who's there. But what happens is, as soon as you put your name in there, it is public information for every other coach. So, you know, if I today put my name into the transfer portal, then every coach in the NCAA knows it. And now I am open to being recruited by them.
Okay, now so, can you pull your name out?
I know this because Mike Bray talked about it. When Cormac Ryan, who plays for Notre Dame now, he played a year at Stanford. When Cormac Ryan put his name in the transfer portal, they called him before noon the next day.
All right,
to arrange it. Now, he is a guy that they recruited from high school, so they already had a relationship with him. They already knew him, and in most cases, that's what's going to happen. Is a lot of these coaches know the players who have decided to transfer, and so they'll reach out to them and basically pick up where they left off during the first time around with recruiting.
If you put your name in for a week and the guy who you want to call you doesn't, can you pull your name out and everything's okay? And once you put it in,
yeah, you can back out and say, okay, I'm coming back, as long as you know. Again, this gets to be, what do you work out with your existing coach? There probably won't be a lot of coaches who are disposed to saying, okay, go ahead and test the waters. They're going to ask you in or out. I am sure that's going to be the case almost everywhere. And so they're going to say, if you're going to transfer, you're going to transfer. And, you know, I'll help you. Talk to me. I'll help you get situated in a good spot, whatever. And most of the people who transfer, because you'll hear about hundreds of players being in the transfer portal, most of them are downshifting. Most of them, they're not suited to the level where they are. And they're going to say, you know, I want to go play at a smaller school. I want to go someplace where I can be on the field all the time. So, when you get the guy going from Notre Dame to Florida State, hey, that happens. You know, Georgia to Ohio State, that happens. But for the most part, you're talking about a lot of guys who just are not in a situation where they see them playing very much. And especially if they've graduated, you know, if you go to a school where you really want the degree from there, but you still want to play, you know, like every athlete, you want to play at the highest level you can that your talent allows for as long as you can. And so a lot of these guys are saying, hey, if I go to a 1AA school and start for a year or two, that's my last hurrah at football. Cool. I get to do it, or basketball or whatever.
Well, just to let the record reflect two things. One is, the flip side of having these kids show up in June, essentially for summer school, and kind of require them never to go home, if the kid is even a normal student and takes advantage of the tutors and all those kinds of things, just as a general principle, if he takes anywhere near a full load during the year, which maybe he might not during the season, anybody is going to graduate probably December of their senior year, and maybe even after their junior year, right, Kevin?
Yeah, in many cases, yeah.
Or certainly after that summer, maybe. And maybe you can take the next...
If you're a semester ahead, and so you're going to graduate after your, halfway through your, what would be your senior year, then if you're a football player, you don't have to do anything more, because the season is over by the start of the second semester. If you're a basketball player, you might take one or two courses, you know, just
for grins,
maintain your status.
But also, I think, Kevin,
it's your senior year. But in many cases, yeah, a lot of guys graduate as juniors and move on. And look, in that regard, if the ability to transfer, if the flexibility, if whatever it is, if it's making guys get degrees, if it's causing more guys to get degrees, I'm all for it. I think that's, you know, that's a good thing. Just like the guy Dylan Gibbons, you know, he's going to get, he got an MBA last year from Notre Dame, and he's going to get another graduate degree from Florida State this year.
Well, I also think that the I always rail about those people, our listeners and kind of contributors and whoever it is, who let's say foolishly believe that there is free agency in baseball. I think you need to take a pill, because I'm not being disparaging. What I'm saying is, because 10 players a year at the absolute top of the pyramid can change, that doesn't begin to cause freedom for everybody else in the pyramid all the way down to the bottom in the minor leagues, to the point where if you get drafted by a team that's got four first basemen, you're pretty much stuck if you're a first baseman, unless they move you. But I think this idea of this transferring and these kids ditching on their teams, Kevin, the first person I ran into when I showed up my freshman year was another guy who was a freshman. He was a kind of a weird duck. I'm sure you never met him. He lasted a week. And he said, one of the coaches I was always pretty fond of, Eric Parsegian, he goes, basically rhymes with something, told me I was the center he wanted, and I got here and there's four other centers, I'm out of here. So the idea that these coaches feel that they need to tell the truth to any of these kids, I'm not going to paint the brush to everybody, I guess maybe I just did. I mean, the idea that they're going to tell you, yeah, there's only two guards coming in next year and you show up and there's five, it's not like you can say, now you have to sit out a year, right? I mean, it's not like the truth works both ways anywhere. I mean, politics or coaching, shall we say.
Just yeah, saying. Understood. Yeah, and like I said, anything that makes college athletics more transparent, I think is good, because there has always been so much that happens under the table, and the less of it, the better. It's not all going to, you know, the corruption's not all going to go away, but some of it is.
Well, one of Audrey's friends.
You know, maybe some of it can be, maybe there can be some improvement. So, you know, we'll take it until the whole system collapses and then and they go to some other model.
Well, I don't know if you were listening the other day when I had dinner this weekend with Notre Dame floor friend Audrey's over. A lady I've known forever. Her niece has got a scholarship in volleyball to someplace, and I'm not going to say the name of the school. And evidently, the whole point was she was going to, you know, pretty much have a chance of playing as a freshman, unless she showed up, you know, 30 pounds overweight, can't do anything anymore. And she basically tells my friend, she goes, "If I'm not starting and I'm healthy, I'm out of there." That's what I was promised. And you know, it's. They just say that the kids feel more active on this than they did in our day, Kevin. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, and you know, in many ways that's good, but also the entitlement versus, you know, feeling like I have to earn my spot and earn my time.
Yeah. Oh yeah, well, that's
that's been eroded.
I would say,
and
you're correct.
You know, that's part of why you see so many transfers after 1 year.
Yeah,
is that someone says, "Well, you know, I didn't get to play as a freshman." You know, hang around. You know, 2 year starter at a major program is pretty good. You know,
well, not near. SP Futures up 19. NASDAQ Futures up 66. We're making up almost all of yesterday's losses so far. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Lower Lower Back Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Out. Mr. Thomas Fall on the board. Maddie's watching. Thomas is doing good. From what I hear, the feedback I hear, S&P Futures up 1875. NASDAQ Futures up 66. So we're trying to, like I said, we're trying to make up for it yesterday. Just as a review of yesterday, the Dow was down 151, S&P down 21, NASDAQ down 38. So we're more than back on the NASDAQ. We're not quite there in the S&P, and we're a little more than back on the Dow. So let's see. Over in Europe, we've got DAX up 70.4%. We've got the FTSE up 21.3%. CAC around up 20.3%. So moderately to the upside there. Over in Asia, Nikkei up 373. Nikkei has been very volatile lately. It's over 30,000 here, 30,381. It's up 1.25%. Shanghai up 9.3%. Hang Seng up 489, 1.9%, as they were down over 2% yesterday. So they're up and down this week as well. The bonds, U.S. 10-year up 1 basis point to 1.31. The Bund up 1 basis point to minus 0.34. Japan up 1 basis point to 0.05. So all the 10-year is up, so that would mean the bonds are down a little bit. Oil up $1.27, $69.41. Still can't make it back to 70. It was interesting that it was up yesterday almost to 70 and went down during the day. Now it's back up almost to 70. Brent up $1.28, $72.74. Natural gas down a penny, $5.01, which is, by the way, very high for natural gas, over $5. I'm not so sure I've ever seen it there. RBOB up 4 cents, $2.14. We've got gold is down $2, $17.98, still right around this $1,800 number. Silver down 3 cents, $24.14. Copper up 8 cents, $4.37. And we've got our crypto. It's down 472 to 46,140. Again, it was over 50,000 on Monday morning. Thomas, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
All right, and good morning, everyone. It is now 6:35 here in the Chicagoland area. Our weather is currently a nice, crisp 59 degrees. We're going to reach a high of 80 today, Chief, and pretty clear, straightforward for the weekend. So a good way to start us off. Our Phoenix listeners, we are currently looking at 86 degrees, and they're going to reach a high of 106. But I think it's a dry heat, Chief, so
yeah,
I'm pretty
heat.
Sure
yeah,
that they're
going
to be fine.
Don't worry
nothing,
about it.
Nothing major to report on the Chicago area for our traffic, kind of standard buildup at this point. So that makes my life easy, which is a good thing for the listeners. So, Chief, in sports, our opening season in the NFL kicked off, and we picked up right where last season ended as Tom Brady led the defending champion Tampa Bay Buccaneers to a 31-29 victory over the Dallas Cowboys with a last-second drive. Dak Prescott was a standout as he threw for 403 yards and 3 TDs, and Gronk scored 2 touchdowns in a very entertaining season opener. In other areas of interest, Chief, the Chicago White Sox dropped 2 out of 3 to the Oakland Athletics as they lost 3-1. The Cubs were off yesterday, and that is pretty much what I got for you today in sports.
The Cubs, Chief, are going to try and mess with the Giants this weekend, huh? Maybe.
Yep. Yeah, that is true to announce that Chris Bryant will be returning to Wrigley.
Yeah, well, that's was he going to be cheered? I imagine.
Why would he not?
Oh yeah.
Just saying, you know.
Yeah, he should get a warm welcome. You know, I think as you sort of looked at the pecking order, you know, certainly Lester got a really good welcome home. I think the one that would probably get the biggest is Rizzo. You know, where not only was he good for a long time, but he had that he had the personality to sort of become one of those beloved players. I think Baez would probably get the same treatment.
Well, he's a huge hero.
We'll see. You know, as they all come through, but. But that's the way I see it. Is Bryant will get a warm welcome. Rizzo will get, people will want to hug him.
I would agree. I also think that to anybody concerned, they're all really good ball players, and I didn't want to see any of them leave. And I actually kind of liked them all, but none of them were worth 20 times per year than the people they have now. None of them.
Well, and that falls under the category of so far, but that's okay. The guys that are playing for him are playing really well, and that's good. The reason the Cubs are bad is because they traded away their relief corps too.
Yeah. Don't be a prisoner of the moment either. Yes, are these guys looking?
Let me rephrase.
Serviceable.
Let me rephrase. Somebody who's batting 240 is not worth $20 million a year.
But your valuation is not that does not reflect what the market states. So you're a finance guy, right?
Yeah. Before you don't go there.
I'll put on some gloves and fight a guy.
Don't go there. You're talking about, first of all, baseball is not a market. It is a very contrived market where only a few people get to change teams in the balance of power every year. So the value of those people in that very narrow market are way higher than it would be if the market was truly free.
Well, I never stated it was a free market, and there is the opportunity for them to establish value, and it's
a value in a very narrow.
But it's still there. I mean, if they go out on the market right now, this is what they perceive as the value is what they're going to get.
If you said everybody in baseball would be available to be, I'll use the term, auctioned off tomorrow, there's no way that Chris Bryant gets $20 million. No way that Javi.
I would disagree,
because everybody's not going to get $20 million. That's my point. There's only
I understand your point, Tom. It's a matter of what you value, but I do get your point that if everybody with an expiring contract were a free agent, then the market would be saturated, and it wouldn't, the individual, each individual wouldn't be such a rare commodity at the moment. So I'm with you on that, and that's everybody with an expiring contract, because they're not all eligible to leave their teams.
Right.
That's fine. By the same token, is Yasmani Grandal, is he worth a lot more than a lot of guys, even though he's hitting what, 210 or something?
Sure.
Oh yeah. Well, he's on base over 40% of the time, and he's a pretty good catcher. It isn't the 240 that bugs me necessarily on a player. I just need to know more about him.
And Rizzo's worth.
Of course, what always drives me nuts is the guy who has no discipline at the plate.
Well, Rizzo's worth 3-4 outs a week, easy at first base, which is the same as 3-4 hits. He's steadied the Yankees' defense down tremendously since he's got there. He's a superior.
Yeah, you're
player.
Talking wins above replacement, yeah. Tom. That's what you're talking about.
Well, no, I'm saying there always has been.
He's stumbling down that road.
I'm not. What I'm saying is, we never in the day, other than people who actually knew what they were talking about, it was very difficult to. There wasn't really a statistic, and I'm not so sure this wins above replacement does it, to be honest with you. But there really wasn't a way for, say, a Mark Grace, who didn't quite make the Hall of Fame because of power numbers, yet if you added his defensive capabilities, or who's the other guy who was the coach of Tampa, or Miami, the other first baseman, tells his name. You know what I'm talking about, Kevin. He's not quite in the Hall of Fame either. If you added their defensive prowess to their batting average, both of them should be, because of the amount of hits they took away from other people and their value per week to you. And I don't know if WAR does that, but it's
the mindset that you're talking
right.
about. Whether it's wins above replacements or come up with any other number that you want or evaluate it subjectively, it doesn't matter. What you're saying is that his impact on the game is what matters.
Yes.
And some of it's not measurable.
Well, I mean, to be
correct.
The worst
fair statement.
Yes, the worst I ever saw was a guy in softball that hit the ball further than probably almost anybody to this day. Was a guy named Benny Holt. Remember him?
Sure.
He hit, when he went to play in the 12-inch league, how many home runs did the guy hit? Anyway, but he was this big, huge guy. He was a trucker, and I think he was one of the first people around that could bench like 350 or something, some huge number. And the guy hit the ball a mile, but he played catcher, and if there was a play at the plate, he wouldn't cover. because he didn't want to get his hands bashed up in case it might happen. Because he was a truck driver, so
sound
I wanted
like a guy after my own heart.
All I wanted to do was hit. He was a perfect AH, as it was before AHs. Anyway, Kevin, I want to turn the bus here a second. Talk a little bit about kind of what Lou is up to with, and well, a little bit about the president's speech. But let's forget about that for a second.
You can do that with Carl.
I just whatever.
We're moving closer to Australia and New Zealand today.
Well, the idea that when a government doesn't have a right to do something, you can demand that employers do it. I want to know where that idea came from, and I want to know where they think that an employer has something, a right that the government doesn't have. I mean that is one of the most ridiculous and possibly damaging things to freedom I've ever come across. Anyway, but let's not worry about that. Let's talk a little bit about 9/11. It's been obviously 20 years, and I can remember it vividly in my mind. I think most people can. And I wonder, what do you think? You don't want to criticize anybody, but by the same token, if you're not self-critical, you never really get any better. We talked a couple weeks ago, I don't think you were on, about the first attempt to blow up the towers where the guy put the thing with the bomb downstairs when he thought he would hit that beam, that one would fall onto the other tower and stuff. So this was kind of the second. I wonder, Kevin, the impact of the planes was so incredible, I don't know if there would have been a way to save it. But I honestly wonder, and this is just me, and probably I was like this because at one point, the Amtrak cars that Pullman made were in a accident somewhere down in Louisiana. Get a load of this. It was in the stretch. If you ever take the city of New Orleans down to New Orleans, which I have, there's a stretch that's like essentially through the swamp, and there's no road on either side. I mean, it's basically just the track. So, of course, I don't know what they did. They left the freight train on the track or did some crappy thing, and so the passenger train runs into it. And there's a crash. I don't think anybody got killed, but there was damage and a couple of cars derailed. Well, they sent a team from Pullman down to identify how the cars had performed. Did they collapse in the way they were designed to collapse, and all these sorts of things. And there was a big report that was written, and it turns out that the cars were engineered very well. The collision posts held, blah blah blah, and. Now my question is: after the first attempt at the World Trade Center, in this world of nobody's at fault ever in Washington or in the states or whatever, they can make every decision that's wrong, and nobody's ever held accountable for it. And did somebody have some? I won't say a commission because there's useless. Did somebody get a group of people together and say, "All right, it looks like these buildings are in play. What are the structural weaknesses and strengths of these buildings? What could happen? What if this happens? What happens? What do we do? Is the sprinkler system from the bottom up, is it substantial? Should we figure out a way to have water in the roof?" I don't know. I mean, does anybody ever sit down and review this stuff and say, what are our weaknesses? What can we do? Is it possible to do anything? Does that ever happen? I mean, I would think that they would find that. I was in that building a couple times, and I thought the thing was amazingly vulnerable, without any internal supports and those kinds of things. I didn't think a plane was going to run into it, and it wasn't my job to. I just thought that there were serious weaknesses in that structure, and I'm not an engineer. I mean, do we ever do things like this? I mean, I know we do. We did in California regarding earthquakes and all the bridges. There was serious work done on buildings and bridges and stuff in California after that one earthquake where the Bay Bridge partially came down. We've done it some places and somewhere, but do we do it routinely all the time? And we have all kinds of people we employ. It's not like we have to go out and hire people. It's how many bazillion people work for the government? What do they do all day, I guess, Kevin? I mean,
in the case of the towers, I mean, first of all, one of the things that was always going to be a problem was that those jets were full, they were fully fueled.
Yes.
So not only did they cause fire, but they fueled it, and that was going to be a problem. I don't know how you plan for that, but what is commonly done, and honestly, the IT world is ahead of the rest of the world on this. We spend a lot of time in supply chain management now on risk assessments, and and I don't know what the state of the art, you know, was for that, you know, if you backed up 20 years. But it really is a matter of just doing good risk assessments. And risk assessment is a big part of disaster planning, and everybody, you know, as long as I can remember in my professional career, has been required to do some level of disaster planning. Required as someone who worked in banking, where the examiners expected you to have disaster plans in place, but also, you know, because it was considered good practice for any business to have some kind of disaster recovery plan. So, but again, most of that would revolve around IT and, you know, what are you going to do if you don't have computers? How are you going to, you know, how are you going to work, et cetera? But you know, you'd still see things because what if your corporate headquarters burned down? That becomes part of the disaster plan. And it was, you know, early on in disaster planning, it was, what am I going to do if? But it really became the art was always to say, what am I going to do to make sure to prevent? So again, I'll relate it to computers, that the redundancy in your systems, having systems that fail over one to the other automatically, and then that they're in two distinct locations, so that if one goes away, the other picks it up in a minute or less. You know, that becomes your disaster recovery plan. Is you don't have to recover from a disaster; you've just averted it. I don't know where that stood at the time of the attacks 20 years ago. And I have to believe somebody was doing something along those lines, just because it would have been considered standard business practice. But I really don't know that there was some kind of risk assessment. And if there wasn't, where are we now in doing that same kind of risk assessment?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Every time we get one of these, quote, disasters, where things, you know, go back to the guy poking a hole in the thing in Chicago, I did tell you that this is the reason why this is foremost recently is I don't, long story. I wandered into Tripoli and I find Eric, and Eric. Whenever it's always a great evening when you find Eric. So we're talking about how he's doing at Columbia and his new book and blah 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 and the award he just got. Well, of course he's. A couple of, when I say old guys, they were old guys. They come by and say, hey, come on and sit with us. They're friends, Eric. So I go and land with these guys and a couple of characters, to say the least. And, of course, Eric, after about an hour, says, well, I got to go finish my book. He leaves me with these two guys. Anyway, I didn't have an easy out, Kevin. But one of the guys starts telling me, it was, you know, 9/11 was coming up. And one of the guys says, you know, evidently there were two flight schools. There was one in Arizona that everybody knows about, but there was another one in Florida where some of the guys were taking the flying lessons from. And he knows the guy who was running the flight school. And he goes, the guy tried to call the FBI and filed a report. Something's fishy here. These guys, A, they're not from here. B, they don't care if they land it. I mean, these guys are never going to be pilots. What are they doing here? And he passed it up the chain. So I'm giving less and less confidence of, you know, you're reading books all the time that there's always somebody somewhere in the public service or somewhere that at the last minute recognizes the problem and does something about it. That doesn't appear to be the real world we're in, does it?
No, and creating Homeland Security as a big umbrella so that everybody would share and have common purpose was, you know, that was going to be the solution to that particular problem of things just getting blocked along the way, or not getting to the right people to do anything about it. And so that was going to be the big fix. How many times have we had, for example, a shooter? You know, a shooter goes wild and they say, yeah, he was on the radar. I don't know why they didn't, you know, but nobody did anything about it. I have no confidence, especially in federal authorities, to actually follow up on anything. They just suck at it.
Yeah, well, I mean, you wonder, are we really getting what we pay for? Because every time we seem
no.
like, I mean, every president,
I don't wonder.
Yeah.
I don't wonder at all, Tom.
Well, I mean, how do you what is the solution to that? And would people, would anybody really want, would anybody really want the solution? I mean, literally, Kevin, my solution for the area that I know the most about, the SEC and the financial area, and where I see what I consider to be serious imperfections in there and monopolistic stuff and, you know, no backup in the markets. I don't think there is one. You got 17 exchanges instead of one, but they don't have anywhere near the responsibility that the one used to have. That's going by the boards. I mean, I don't know how you don't walk into every one of these places and basically kick ass and take names. And that is not my personality. So I don't want to do it. I'll be honest with you. I don't want to do it. But I mean, that's what has to happen. You've got to be like Wilford Brimley in Absence of Malice. You got to say, when I leave this room, somebody's ass is going to be in this briefcase. Or he said head. Okay. But somebody needs to turn this bus around totally, virtually every one of these places. And the people there, I'm not saying once you fire them all, you don't hire them back under the new regime. But I mean, somehow, someplace, this has gotten way too comfortable. I mean, what do you do with an antitrust department that never has any antitrust? What do they do all day? I mean, that's a very
well,
simple...
Well, hey, they have a second chance now. They can go find all the people who haven't been vaccinated, round them up, and make it happen. So this is a dry run for the important stuff. We're all set to go, Tom.
Well, my concern here, and obviously I listen to Carl, I read other stuff, and obviously now Lou's involved to a certain extent. What I don't get here, I really don't get. I honestly think, and I have people around me that are not vaccinated, I would say to them, you should get vaccinated. Okay? Because I think it's safer for them, and the chances of them landing in a hospital appear to be an awful lot less. So I buy into that. Okay? The thing that I don't quite get, and to the point where it could be dangerous, is this incredible drive to vaccinate people that have not only already had it, but recently already had it. I think there could very well be a danger there. What is that motivation? Just for all my personal stuff, I'm not afraid to say to people, I had the COVID last late October. So after 8 months, my doctor said, it's about time for you to get the vaccine. I got the first one. And I went back to get the second one. It's the Moderna one. And they said, yeah, you're here too soon. Give it another few weeks. Well, another few weeks are next week. So I'm going to go. And I talked to my doctor. And I said, okay, what's the deal? Should I get the second shot? He goes, get the second shot. He goes, but under no circumstances do you take any booster, at least for 8 months. And it better be a booster that more closely resembles what's around today, because the current shots aren't. They're probably better than nothing, but they're not for this. They're for the one 8 months ago or a year ago. So what he said to me made incredible sense. You know, like the guy's up on this stuff. And I'm going to do exactly what he said. So I'm not a anti-vax or anything. But I have read nothing, Kevin. I mean, just in common sense, nobody says that it makes any sense for somebody who had it last week to be forced to get a vaccine this week to go back to work. And yet, if you go online or if you listen to the president's speech, they're demanding you do that. And what if they're wrong? What if Carl's right and that's actually a danger? What are we going to do? Hang these people or throw them out of office? I mean, what is the penalty for something like that? I mean, there's no reason.
And all liabilities have been waived.
And all liabilities have been waived. I don't get it. If I walk into some place, nobody says, give me your measles vaccination card. And I said, well, God's sake, when I was eight, I had it. Okay. I mean, now all of a sudden, we can't believe people. We can't put it on somebody's own personal recognizance that once you had it, you're okay. You tell people I had it, they believe you. We have to have a card. We have to have an app. We have to have something. Kevin, this is going the wrong way. And yet,
We're also saying that that the unvaccinated have to get the vaccine to protect the vaccinated people.
Which is wrong.
How does that make sense? What world is that a sensible thought?
Well, plus it's not correct, because people who are vaccinated are getting it in droves. So it's not correct.
Yeah, and are they getting it from? Who are they getting it from?
Probably other people that have been vaccinated. I think the unvaccinated probably are more spreaders than the vaccinated. I believe that.
You know, I tend to think it's the other way, Tom, because good. The people who are not vaccinated are more likely to have symptoms when they get infected.
Well, that's
And then they can stay, you know, stay home and be treated. Whereas people who are not, who are vaccinated are less likely to have symptoms, even though they are able to spread it.
Well, what's really odd about this, Kevin, is your ability to spread the stuff seems to be also very personal. This disease hits people in many different ways. I mean, it's I have amazing respect for it. I read a, I'm sure I confided in you in this. I read a thing from South Korea, Singapore, and Japan, a group of all those different places. They're convinced that 80% of the people who have gotten it have gotten it from 20% of the people. That some people, for some reason, are super spreaders, and other people. Now, when I had it, nobody around me either had it, they all got tested, had it, or I didn't give it to anybody. So, I mean, so I obviously was not, I didn't see that many people because we were somewhat under the, whatever, we were locked up, but I didn't give it to anybody. But they're saying some people give it to, like, all kinds of people. Anyway, Kevin, we got a dash, buddy. SP Feeder's up 19. As if you're up 69. Are you going to let us know if you cave and all of a sudden pay for the Irish game?
Yeah, I'll let you know immediately.
All right.
Don't hold your breath waiting.
Okay. We'll be right back, Mr. Carl Denninger.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tomo. Mr. Thomas Hall on the board. Manny Weber watching over him like, you know, like he's grading him. But so far, Thomas has been perfect, which is, I think Manny's mad about that because he can't even complain at him. But anyway, but he's been perfect. Thomas, nice job. We have Carl with us. Carl, how are you, bud? SP Feeder's up 19.
Oh, there we go. Push the button.
Yeah, he pushed the button. It's, you know, he's gaining on it. How are you?
I'm doing great.
What, I just got this thing. I'm trying to read it on the fly here, which is kind of difficult. But I just got this. Have you been watching this? Well, there's a group over in Britain now that are they actually? Well, maybe we're doing it here. I don't know, but they are keeping track You ever hear of these guys? They sound like they're legit. Newfield Department of Medicine. They're a group from they're tracking antibody positivity rates through the population, and in some places they're up to like 90% of people that have had it and have been vaccinated. That's pretty good.
Oh yeah. Well, here's the interesting thing. So just this last week, the New England Journal of Medicine, which, I mean, you know, that's the American Medical Association's official mouthpiece, right? They published a study that they did on blood donors across the United States. And the Red Cross and all these other guys, you know, the big red bus guys and all them, you know, that drive around and, you know, get people donate blood. They, of course, run tests on that blood because they don't want to use your pint if it's contaminated with some terrible thing. You're going to end up killing people if you do that. We learned that lesson with HIV. And one of the things that they have been routinely doing is running antibody screens for COVID-19. And this is very valuable to them for a couple of reasons. One of them is that if you have had COVID recently and you have a very high antibody titer, they extract the plasma and use it for convalescent plasma. And they make a lot of money doing this. So, I mean, their motivation is not just health, it's also cash.
Okay. Imagine that, so yeah.
Well, yeah. Imagine that people would actually try to profit from a you know, a disease that kills a bunch of people. What a fantasy land we live in that people would not do that. So, anyway, what they found, you can distinguish between, you know, if you get the measles or you get the measles vaccine, I cannot tell you whether or not you had the measles or you got vaccinated. And the reason is the antibodies that are produced are essentially identical. They're close enough that I cannot distinguish reliably between the two. However, with COVID, that's not true, because all the vaccines that we use in the United States are for the spike only. So if you do not have any nucleocapsid antibodies in your blood, then you got vaccinated. If you do have them, then you've had COVID. Now, you may have also been vaccinated, but you had COVID. Okay, so they distinguished this, and they broke it out. And what they found is that in May, 20% of the population of the United States, and this is across 1.5 million samples, so the statistical power on this is really, really good, and the confidence interval is only 1% wide. They found that 20% of the population of the United States has had COVID, and that the total immunity between the two was 83%.
Wow.
Now there is a very important fact that comes out of that, and it comes from basic immunology, and it also points to the danger of what we're trying to do right now, and it's irrefutable. This again is directly from the Journal of the American Medical Association, and that is 83% total immunity, assuming the immunity is real, is enough to stop the exponential spread. So all you have is you know, an outbreak here, and a little bit of, you know, a little bit of disease here, a little bit of disease there, of anything up to an R naught of 5.88. That is more than double the original projection that came out of the CDC, and it was updated for months and months and months about COVID. And it's also enough to block propagation of a virus that is right in the middle of what the CDC is trying to claim is true of Delta. That, by the way, is under a lot of dispute. The folks in the UK say, no, Delta is mildly more transmissible, but not by much. But in any event, 83%, and this was in May, remember, so I mean, it goes up as time goes on, right, because more people get it, and more people get vaccinated. But as of May, the spike that we took this summer should not have been possible unless the shots don't work.
Really?
It's flatly true. Impossible. Because if you think about it, when you get to approximately half of the suppression rate, okay, this is basic immunology, it's basic public health. When you get to about half, the transmission rate gets bent downward because the virus starts to run out of people that it can infect. And if you don't give it to somebody else, then it fails, right? I mean, it ends with you. You're sick, but nobody else gets it. If all the people you come in contact with are immune, then your disease ends with you. You don't give it to anybody else.
Kyle, what does it say This is a question that I don't know how to formulate, but I'm kind of, well, I'm going to try. What does it say about, I'm trying to tie together demographics and media, which is a tough tie here, but you'll probably get where I'm going with this, is it seems like we're always finding a new place where there's a problem. Now, the numbers you just gave me, are, if you look at them on their face value, are pretty darn impressive. But I have to believe that there are towns in this country, cities, towns, villages, whatever you want to call it, or sections or counties or sections of states, where those numbers are way different. That somehow
absolutely, in both directions. Okay,
yeah, both directions.
Averages.
Because I honestly don't believe that in Chicago that there is a problem here at all. I think some people who've had the vaccination are getting it. They're mild cold. I mean, there's probably some people in the hospital, but not very many. I think the Chicago area basically got their ass kicked by this thing early on. The big city centers did. They had the big problem a year ago, and right now any outbreak by the numbers is going to be somewhat muted. Now, I got to believe that there's spots. I'll pick a city, Central Illinois. Maybe they haven't had it at all. You know, I think if those areas get it and go through the same thing that other people have, and they have, you know, a hospital with seven people that you could put in the intensive care unit, and you end up with 12, and you go interview the nurse who's been forced to work all week, you're going to get a pretty nasty interview, and you're going to have the same kind of stuff we've been seeing. But I can never quite figure out how real widespread it is, and if we're gaining or losing, because it's this constant, if it bleeds, it leads. It seems to me
and here's the thing, though, Keith, that you reach the suppression point doesn't mean that nobody gets sick.
Okay? Right.
I mean, you know, there's people that think that, well, you know, it's like a light switch. You turn it off, it's over. No, that's not how it works for exactly the reason that you put forward, okay? That there are always going to be places where the rate of antibody presence is higher or lower, all right? I mean, average is an average, right? I mean, it doesn't mean that, that's across 1.5 million samples. That doesn't mean that if you go into East Bufu and you look there, you're going to find 20% of the people had COVID and another, 60% were vaccinated, all right? I mean, you're just not going to find that. And here's the other thing that's interesting. There is some crossover here, too, because, of course, some people who had COVID went and got the shot afterward. Now, I happen to think that's silly, but just on the science, okay, when this thing started back in March and April of 2020, they did a cross reaction study trying to figure out whether or not people who had SARS, the original one, had resistance. In other words, how closely related are these viruses and how does this interact? And what they found was that people who had SARS and lived, and SARS, of course, was extremely nasty, people who had SARS and lived were cross-reactive for COVID. They were very unlikely to get seriously sick, and that was 17 years later.
Okay. Hey, so, I want to shift gears on you a little bit, because I have a feeling this COVID's going to be with us, like, for a while.
You think?
Yeah, and I think the president, whatever. I don't want to go into that too much. But this week, one of the themes I've had rolling, and I would sure love your take on it, is some areas of, well, maybe the country in general, but certainly some areas, our area of downtown Chicago, for instance, some area downtowns and some. In fact, I got an email from, shall we say, a group of listeners that have come to Chicago at some time and have heard us here and have stuck with us. And a few of them seem to be elderly ladies that love the show. And I got, a couple from California, one from Australia, one from Britain, one from Ohio. But the one from Ohio sent me an email saying that they were in some smaller town in Ohio that is renowned for being, I guess, eclectic and little shops of this and that and the other thing. You know, you're a basic little tourist town that I had never heard the name of, by the way. But she said they walked in there and, like, all the places are closed Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, like even the bars and restaurants.
Yep.
The idea... Question I have, Carl, for you is I mentioned this before. I'll be very brief. That when I was at Pullman, I always thought it was spectacular that I could see a drawing of what the side of the car looked like. I could kind of put my mind around that this is what the side's going to look like. And obviously you could see the finished side. But I never had the ability to capsulize saying, okay, I'll look at the drawing. You start right here. You put these two parts together with this screw, and then you put this one. I'd always be the guy that would start putting it together and realize I forgot something, have to take it apart and start over. I had an idea of what it's supposed to look like at the end, but I'd say, wait a minute, didn't we have to put the brake lines in before we put the body on this car? Oops. in terms of this economy, as much as I've read, as much as I think for a layman, I know a lot about economics for a layman, not as a PhD like some guys are on the show. I am having a real problem trying to figure out in the downtown Chicago area or some of these other areas what you need to do first to put something together. It's just really the chicken and the egg. And I'm having trouble imagining. I last night I was thinking about it when I was watching a football game during a commercial. That one of the things I probably would do if I had any kind of power, which I don't, is I would at least demand that the public employees come back to work in person. And maybe that's enough people for one or two restaurants to open. So maybe it's enough to where it looks like there's people on the street and people feel like they can walk down the street and not just walk by people that they maybe don't want to walk by. I mean, something has to happen. And that was just a thought. I would never put that in a paper, but something has to happen to prime this pump. And I don't know what it is. I don't know what to do first. Obviously you're not going to restart the exchanges because there's reasons why they're going down. I don't agree with them, but that they're going down, they have nothing to do with the COVID, but the timing is terrible. But I got to believe there's parts of New York that are the same way. There's parts of other places. I mean, what do you do first, I guess, Carl?
I think that's one of the big problems. I mean, there's been this premise for decades that it's the water cooler fallacy. Okay, that all the people that you have that work for you, no matter who the you is. The way that you get extra value is for all of them to be in the office, and then they chat up while they're going and refilling their coffee mug or their glass of water, whatever. And this has been, all the meetings are actually productive. We sit in a conference room and we actually hash things out and do things that are good for the corporation and its bottom line and this and that. Okay, we've just gone through 18 months where essentially every large corporation on the planet, say much less in the United States, was either allowed to or decided to or was forced to by government mandate close. Because you can't have, when I ran MCS, could I have figured out a way to do 6 feet of separation between everybody in my office and stay within the mandates that I probably could have, but at what cost? Okay, and so then I had a bunch of customer service people on the floor in cubes, and I had a bunch of technical support people in cubes. I had, executives in offices, including myself. I had our sales people that were off in another area where they could have a conversation without everybody else hearing it. In that sort of thing, and some of them were roving guys that went around and tried to sell things, and then they came back and worked up deals. Just what the general office does, right? It's pretty much any enterprise. And the thing is, though, is that at that time, it was not possible for me to take my customer service people and my tech support people and say, you sit at home and do your job, and here's your computer terminal, put on this headset, and the calls will come to you while you're sitting in your living room. There was no technical capacity to do that. Today, it's trivial. My daughter works for a company I will not name, which has figured out a way to get around wage and hour laws, and she literally sits in her room with a headset on, and as far as the people who call know, she's sitting in some big corporate office. Well, she's not. Okay? And the only thing she needs to make that work is cable, based on high-speed internet access, but as far as a customer knows, they don't know where the blankety-blank she is. I mean, look at all the call centers that, got moved over to Hong Kong or Taiwan or whatever. Well, guess what? This is in the United States. They do this in the U.S. But these people are dispersed all over the place. And this is now true for most of corporate America. So how do you entice them? You know, look, when I was running my internet company, Class A office space downtown Chicago, the going rate was $40 a foot.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Okay. By the way, I paid $8 for mine in Prudential Plaza, 2 Pro, because I managed to glom onto a deal when somebody told the building managers to go fight it and walked out in the middle of the night. They had a little problem with their coverage covenants. And we fixed it, and I slapped a bunch of cash on the table because they're like, well, who in the blankety blank are you? How do we know you're going to pay the lease? And I said, well, here's 6 months worth of rent.
Well, Kelly, I'm going to say that, as usual, there's no hard answer. I mean, I remember when Audrey didn't have her own real estate place. I mean, way back in the day, I mean, somebody would require them to show up at 9 o'clock in the morning. Even though the minute they got there, they turned around and drove right past their house again to show a house to somebody that was already scheduled. Let me just lob these out there. The idea, I mean, who gets to judge? I mean, I think in your daughter's situation, for her, it's fine. I also read recently one of the biggest reasons why people want to stay home is they have a side hustle. They got another job they're working from home.
Right.
You know, for me, the consumer, you can tell me how efficient your daughter is, this is not a personal shot, you know that. But the fact is, the people that I call, just, you know, because I know them, that work at firms that I'm very familiar with, they'll say, you know, if you're looking for somebody, press this, you press right. this, and you never, and I also know that the state of Illinois, that I'm sure they will tell you that everything's fine. Well, hell, you mail something into them. You mail your registration in to get a title. It might be a year. They're 2 million behind in passports. Who's kidding who? They're not doing anything, Kyle.
You're right. I'll tell you what. Here's the interesting thing. So, you know, about a year and a half ago, I moved here to Tennessee, okay, from Florida. Every single state I've ever lived in, every locale that I've ever lived in, dealing with the DMV, the title office, driver's license, pain in the butt, okay? I mean, you want to talk about the demonstration of the inefficiency of government in action.
Yeah.
It was there. That was the office where it was a nightmare. I lived in Chicago. The bottom of the Daily Center, you know, off to the side was where the DMV office was to get their license renewed. Right? That was a nightmare. I come up here. I go into it's considered part of the Homeland Security office now. I go over there, and in 5 minutes, I have a Tennessee driver's license. 5 minutes, time I walk in the door. Then I go down to the courthouse, and in less than 5 minutes, I have titles and tags for all my vehicles.
Really? Well,
what? Some people do actually. Now, this was all in person. There's no virtual anything, right? I mean, these guys were all there. And the point here is that when you have a situation where everything's dispersed, and don't get me wrong, the reason that these corporations do this kind of screwball thing, like, you know, what people are doing, to a large degree, it's regulatory avoidance. And again, you can play games with wage and hour laws if everybody's a contractor, right?
Yep.
And get away with it. And by the way, the person on the other end of the phone who's taking those calls is the one that's getting it in their shorts from that, because that compliance doesn't happen yet. When I ran my company, you got that nice big poster from the Department of Labor that you got to have in your break room that's got all the rules on it, right? And you follow those, because those guys will come down on you like a piano if you don't. And so, you know, there you are. But the thing is this, for all these companies that said go work from home and sit on Zoom when you have to have a meeting with somebody, and oh, by the way, your phone is now routed through the internet, and it sounds exactly like you're sitting in the office. All right, now I've got this nice office space down there that was costing me how many million dollars a year?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I would say that I'm not naive enough or a Luddite enough to say that after all this is over, there are, in every company, there are jobs that, if you're on the phone with clients all the time, the thought that 2 days a week you can do that from home, depending on the person. Now, if you've got kids at home, That's not the same. You've got issues with separation of your work environment and your home environment, and Pullman found out for years that that's actually very important. You don't want to be working from home or bring kids to work necessarily. So there's psychological issues. But somebody who only talks to clients all day long and you can route the phone back, I mean, could he or she work just as effectively at home at least some percentage of the time and save you 10 to 20% of your office space? I'm not Luddite enough to say no. I mean, you're right.
Absolutely. But you know what? Here's the problem. All the downtown places, all these towns where there were, you know, there's a couple of big buildings there and they're full of people, or at least I thought it was in 2019. What do you do when all of the shibboleths that have gone on for so long about the corporate environment and the office environment and blah, 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 they all got blown up through the entirety of 2020. And yet, the company did not die. Not only did it not die, look at the stock market. It didn't do badly, right?
Okay, but yeah, whoa, don't go there. You take the Fed out of the stock market. The stock market's up 25%, and the money supply is up 25%. To me, that's
I'm not arguing that, yeah. You know, that this wasn't whether you want to call it a bubble or just a supported market, it doesn't make any difference. The fact is, but here's the thing. All of these companies, other than the little guy who's running the diner or the bar, okay, he's done. But everybody else is not. And the thing, why would those people bring these people back? Look at what's going on with some of these large firms, Salesforce, Facebook, Microsoft. Do you think all those people are going back to the office?
No.
No, they're not.
No, I don't think they are, but I also think that it's not everybody can be efficient at home. Your daughter gets to do that.
You're absolutely right. Look, I'm just saying, but without the critical mass in the core of these cities.
I think you're still going to have critical mass. Plus, I think that we are, at the end of the day, even though we've lost track of it, we're somewhat pack animals. I mean, nobody wants to be at home if the other four people in the department are at work talking about them.
Oh, absolutely.
Not to mention the fact nobody's going to get promoted from home.
Right. And there is a huge, you know, there's all these undercurrents that end up coming out to play eventually, right? And frankly, most of this, I think, when we stop with the panic porn, and I don't know when that's going to happen, but when we do, and we put the fear megaphone away, and look, I mean, you know, I've been analyzing this stuff for the last year and a half, right? I got COVID, and it intruded into my mind, even though I've been analyzing this stuff for a year.
Yeah, yeah.
But that megaphone in your face, every day, all day, I don't care how analytical you are, it gets into your headspace.
Well, sure.
And that has to stop. And the thing is this, if the government and the media don't cut it out, when does it stop? Because until it does, we're not going to get to this place where people say, you know what, let's go back to the office, let's do our work, and then, let's go down to a pub and have a couple of beers.
And that's not happening. It's someplace along the line, Carl, there's a call that has to be made. And I am certainly not the person that can make it. But I'll go back to, not that I was alive in 1918. Someplace along the line, H1N1 is still with us.
Oh, yeah.
But now it's the point where these are decisions that people always had to make. I mean, I'm very aware of the decisions I made. I mean, I was young and dumb, but when I walked into the 350 people in the OEX pit every day, there were days when 300 of them sounded to me like they were coughing their guts out or their lungs out. And if I was 70 and I was in bad health, I probably would have said, this is not for me today. But at age 35 and I was, you know, everybody feels like they're bulletproof. And once in a while I caught what guys got and most of the time I didn't, or maybe I already had it once and didn't get it again. But it was my call. And at some point, there was, if you don't get to, not go to work because you think you might get the flu. Well, you're not going to die from the flu. Get your ass in here. I mean, and it's going to get to the point where we might be close with this variant that an appreciably number of people. I mean, one thing I know we can't do, Carl, is we can't open up a school in the Chicago area. You know what the amount of what do they call it, an outbreak is? You know how many kids?
What are they talking, like two people now or something
two,
like that?
It's two. So two kids have the Delta variant. You shut the school down. You send them home. The kids, after a couple of days, have, you know, cold symptoms, which is what's happening to most people, especially if they've been vaccinated. Of course, if they're under a certain age, you can't get vaccinated. But now you reopen the school and two other kids. Carl, we could be doing that in the year 2050. I mean, we can't do that.
And here's the thing. I mean, if you think about it, what we've done in the past, first off, among children, the flu is much more dangerous than COVID. That's just the data. There's been under 400 kids that have been killed by this thing, under 18, since it started. And that's from the CDC. Okay, that's not me making stuff up. That's the CDC's official data.
Did you see, there actually was a chart we sent around. I think I might have sent it to you last year. And it was pretty fascinating. They said a bad flu under the age of a year or two, flu is like eight times more dangerous than COVID for kids.
And RSV.
But it kind of
kills them all the time.
But it kind of breaks even at age 12, and by the time you were like 75, the COVID was 35 times more dangerous than the flu. Did you remember that chart?
Yeah, and that's, I mean, you know, this is a weird virus. Okay?
Yeah.
I mean, compared to all the other stuff that we deal with, you know, every day walking around. It is very strange. It does odd stuff. But the idea that we can just cower under our desk for the next 50 years is crazy.
Well, we can go to break, though. S&P futures up 18, NASDAQ futures up 73. We come back. All week, Carl, guys have been talking about these labor numbers and these shortages, and now most places the unemployment's coming off. And I had to remind several of the people of your observation last week that we seem to just be down people in general. And I want to, because that's like the second biggest news in the country is the labor shortage, whatever you want to call it. And I want you to dig deeper into that if you can, because you're probably the only guy I know that can. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and try to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of HomeSource Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. Not much volume on the music for me. Whatever you got going there. Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. He's Mr. Thomas Hall, working on the board over there. Working. I'm trying to figure out. I've got so many things open here. I'm trying to find my pages and whatever. I'm gonna have to find it here in a second. We'll have to get it again. S&P futures are up 1975. We're trying to get back everything from yesterday, and we're right about there. NASDAQ futures up 71, which is more than we were down yesterday. Dow's up 159, which is more than they were down yesterday. So we're doing our bounce Friday here, at least so far. Over in Europe, we've got, oh, by the way, PPI was up 0.7% last month. They've got it 8.3% on an annual basis. Biggest advance on record. Okay, admit we have our kind of buffoonish, in my opinion, Federal Reserve people still talking about 2%. And when we come back, I want to ask Carl before I forget about the Fed guy who did all the trading last year and what Carl thinks about that. I don't think too much about it. DAX up 54.3%, FTSE up 25.4%, CAC around up 18.3%. As a matter of fact, I'm on a rail on that a little bit when we're done here. Nikkei up 373, it's up 1.25%. Shanghai up 9.3%. Hang Seng up 49, 1.9%. They were down over 2% like yesterday, so they're all over the place. Over in, U.S., the bonds were, I'm sorry, yesterday Dow was down 151, S&P down 21, NASDAQ down 38. Bonds, the 10-year rate is up 2 basis points to 1.32. The Bund, I think this is because of his PPI numbers has jumped up here. Bund is up 0.02 as well to minus 0.34. Remember yesterday the ECB said they were going to cut back on their asset buying program. And then they also said it's not going to make any difference in interest rates. I don't know how that can be, but that's what they said. Japan up to 0.05 and UK is up to 0.74. Okay, oil. Up $1.15 to $69.29. Tried to get back to 70 earlier in the week. That slapped back down, and it's railing back up again. Brent up $1.16 to $72.63. They're pushing towards 73, obviously. Natural gas up a penny to $5.05, which is real high. RBOB up 3 cents to $2.13. We've got gold down 60 cents, which again is unfathomable with these interest rates going, or with the inflation going up, it is, but it's $17.99. Silver down a penny, $24.16. Copper up 8 cents, $4.36, and that's also very high. Crypto down $5.11 to $46,100. Thomas, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
All right, and good morning, everybody. It is now 7:37 here in the Chicagoland area, with the temperatures looking at 61 degrees currently. We're going to reach a high of 80. It looks like it's going to be a beautiful day, Chief. So make sure we get those afternoon walks and maybe get a happy hour again going early today. Our Phoenix listeners, it's currently 85, which is going to reach a high of 106. So they have zero chance of precipitation, which sounds about right for that area or region of the United States. Traffic, nothing major to report, so we'll keep it brief there. Kind of a typical drive into the city for a Friday. In sports, we had the opening kickoff for the NFL season, and we've seen the Tampa Bay Buccaneers win on a last-second drive by Tom Brady as they won 31-29. Some stats of note, Dak Prescott threw for 403 with 3 touchdowns. Gronk scored 2 touchdowns, and it was a very entertaining game. The White Sox went down to defeat to the Oakland Athletics 3-1. The Cubs were off. They welcomed San Francisco and Chris Bryant back to Wrigley Field at a 0-120 start. And looking here to see who the White Sox play. They will play Boston at Guaranteed Rate. Chief.
Our guys in the Triple A will be there watching the Boston guys. They'll be there. All worried about the Sox, you know. Boston's in a real fight for that last wild card spot, right? I believe they are.
Yes, they are. And it looks like the Toronto Blue Jays have caught fire. So it'll be interesting to see how that race pans out. I think New York is the one that's closer to being out of the playoffs at this current time.
Why does it always make me feel good when I'm in the Triple E with all the Boston fans and Boston's losing?
Because you're a curmudgeon, possibly.
Well, you tell me that the Boston fans aren't the most obnoxious on earth.
Well, I'm sure if you go to Boston, they'll say New York is the most obnoxious, or we are the most obnoxious.
No, we're not. We're nowhere near the same. We don't have a bunch of bar pounders. I don't like people pounding on the bar, Carl. For whatever reason, just even if a Boston guy strikes out, that's not reason to pound on the bar. I'm just saying.
Well, you know, I went to the AA club. It's their last homestand this week, and Wednesday night I went over there and watched it. And it was a very entertaining game. The Smokies won in the bottom of the 10th with a smack over the fence with one guy on.
Really? Are they what club are they affiliated with?
Cubs.
Oh, really? Really?
Yeah. So I mean, you know, and you know what? I mean, it's baseball, okay? I mean, it's full of errors. The Chattanooga team had, I think, 5 during the game. the actual chargeable errors that they gave up. But the nice thing is, I had a seat second row right behind home plate, and guess how much I paid for that ticket?
$8.
$10.
Okay.
And the beers were 6.
I have a question. I should know this, but The Cubs A team is the one of them. Is their senior A team is now in South Bend. Their Triple A is in Des Moines.
Yeah,
I thought their Double A was Midland. Did they move to Tennessee?
No, it's the Smokies is a Cubs feeder.
Really? Well, good for them. Hey, real quick, because we want to talk about the labor stuff, but also there's so much stuff here to talk about. Well, the inflation number. My bro sent me this thing. It's here someplace. Oh, I feel like here it is. The FAO food price index. You're familiar with this? My brother is very into this stuff, Carl, sort of like you are in labor, because he used to trade corn options over at the CBOT on the floor. So he, you know, being the accountant MBA guy that he is, he of course has to dig into everything about everything regarding corn and wheat and different spreads and whatever. But he's retained an interest, even though he's now president of PTI, in like all things grain and how it affects things around the world. And he digs up this thing called the FAO Food Price Index, which, it's from someplace. Some of it's in the United Nations or somewhere. And, there's a bunch of different columns here. Meat, dairy, cereals, vegetable, and sugar. And,
right.
And he claims that the worldwide food column is the one that says cereal, because that's what basically people eat around the world. They don't eat meat. Most of them don't have dairy. Anyway, and he points to a big upsurge in the years 2011, 12, and 13, and how it corresponded. Really started in 2008. Well, maybe even 2007. And how it corresponded almost exactly with Arab Spring, all these uprisals all over the place that were really going on a lot in those times, and how we're cooking right back to those numbers now. We're not quite back to the 142, but we've got, in this year, we're starting to push 123, 125, 132, 129. We're getting there, and it's becoming very, very significant. And his claim is that the number, and again, Carl, you can opine on this. He says it comes down to like $5 a day. Is what it costs for somebody, the equivalent of $5 a day for people to essentially have substance food in these areas. And once it goes over $5, all this other stuff seems to happen. And we're there. And I just want you to sort of comment on that. And if you want me to tell him my brother's nuts, I'll be happy to tell him that. But
No, I don't think he's nuts at all. In fact, that's one that I look at. And then the other one that's interesting is the data comes out of FMI, which is the U.S.-based Food Marketing Institute. And the reason that I know about that one is because I used to, many, many years ago, I worked for IRI, which spun off VideoCard. I did their network and software development. And so, you know, that was, I mean, and IRI, by the way, was the company that first drove putting scanners in grocery stores. It was, the grocery stores loved it because it allowed them to break the checkers unions. And FMI and IRI specifically loved it because they got the data stream and allowed them to run their analytics, and so did Nielsen, AC Nielsen, who was their competitor. So they paid for the scanners, but then they own the data. That isn't, you know, gee, funny how that works.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, got by John, by the name of John Malik, who from Chicago, very wealthy, and that was how he made his money. And so, you know, I mean, this is, but yeah, you're right. And the thing is that when you get to a certain point, when people get squeezed on being able to eat, bad things start happening. Okay. That's sort of the lesson in there. And there is a certain level around the world. Obviously it's higher here in the United States than it is in, you know, East Fofo. But on a composite basis, when that number gets up there where people start getting squeezed, you start seeing all kinds of really nasty geopolitical things happen.
I had a listener, serious listener, that, you know, they sent me stuff that really is pretty interesting. They sent me something yesterday that said 18% of the people in Venezuela have left.
Is that possible? I don't know. Maybe, but
it seems like a lot.
Would be where they go.
Well, my brother claims that that Colombia has accepted a lot of people.
Yeah, they have.
It can't be 18%.
You know, one of the things that's interesting, I've written about this, good Lord, it's got to be a dozen times by now. When Trump came into office, of course, what he said was you're going to stop all this migration and this illegal invader flow coming out of Central and South America, okay? And I said, you know, guys, look, you see all these stories in the news, and they're true, that these coyotes are being paid $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 to, you know, shuttle people in the United States, because these are people who do not speak English, they don't know how to get here, and oh, by the way, once you get to where the border fence is, you got to know where to go through, where there isn't going to be an agent standing right on your side, right?
Yeah.
So there is an art to this. People get paid for it. I said, do you think any of these people in these countries actually have $5,000? They don't have $10.
Right.
So how are they getting paid? And the answer is remittances. And I said, the way you shut this down in an hour is if you go to Western Union or somewhere else and you're going to do a remittance back to Mexico or Venezuela or wherever you're going to do it, you have to be a citizen and you have to be able to prove the funds came from a legitimate source, just like know your customer in the banking system. If you can't do that, you can't send the money. You cut the money flow off, and the entire thing collapses in an afternoon.
Yeah, well, so does everything else.
Well, the problem is so do a lot of other things, right? But the thing is, nobody's willing to actually go there and stop the problem. Now, is there a problem with a legitimate person here in the United States sending money to their, you know, back to their family in Mexico? No. As long as they earn the money legitimately, and as long as they're here legally, no, there's not a problem with it. It's your money. Do whatever the blankety-blank you want with it. But that's not where the cash is coming from that's being sent to fund these things.
Well, I have as you know, we'll spend a little more time on this topic because I definitely want to get to the talk about this Fed guy trading his stock, which is unconscionable.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Well, I mean, the Fed has been under, we know, a guest of the show was basically tossed out of the, the news conference for Janet Yellen because he asked about the status of the Fed leaking information and being traded upon. He was never invited back. So the Fed is essentially investigating themselves, since they haven't come out with a report that I know of. Maybe they have, and I just haven't seen it. And essentially people front-running their stuff. And here's a guy trading in the middle of it. And you know what frosts the hell out of me is, I don't like I can't tell if they're idiots or whether they're just being disingenuous, Carl, because the reporter yesterday was on CNBC said that the story was he had followed all the rules because he had never made a trade during one of their blackout periods before a meeting. Carl, you and I know that the way you move the market is to go give a speech somewhere or know somebody's speech, not in the blackout period. So,
right.
So whoever has that rule there is either a moron or thinks we're morons, and I think it's the latter. Because, and I, you know what, Carl, described as being grumpier. I'm grumpier because I'm tired of getting lied to and being taken for an idiot from people I pay. We were talking about the president speaking last night, and to me, a lot of things he said, were not the whole truth, let's put it that way. And I said, I know that there's people all over the world that are going to tell me if I put this thing on my face, it's going to look like I'm 25. You know what? And I know that. But you know what? That's a bunch of crap. But I also know that I'm not paying them.
Right.
I'm paying this guy. I'm paying Lori Lightfoot. I'm paying Jay Pritzker. I paid Trump. Well, I don't know if he took the check or not, but, these are our working stiffs, for lack of a better term, that we're paying that are lying back to us. That to me is different than a 2-bit carny huckster lying back to us. I know he's trying to sell his snake oil and he's going to tell me anything. I get it. I'm old enough to figure that out. I just don't want to hire somebody and somebody feel like they have to lie back to me. Or is that being too grumpy?
By the way, how about Kaplan and Rosengren?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, if you want to get mad, I mean, like really angry, all right? Last time I checked, at least allegedly, when you get into a high office at the federal level that has monetary influence, you're supposed to put your assets in a blind trust. And at least in theory, all right, if you do anything at all, it's on broad indexes. You're not buying and selling individual names.
Right.
Well, both Rosengren and Kaplan own them.
My buddy Doc, not Dr. J, who his boss is involved in politics forever, we had a conversation long before I got on the air. This has to have been 25 years ago, 30 years ago. And he explained to me how this all has to go in these trusts, and that's why there was a congressman here at the time named Marty Russo, nice guy. He was our congressman out in Evergreen Park, where I grew up. And he's probably 6-7 years older than me. He was one of the guys, remember the ConCon, the Constitutional Convention, where that
Oh, yeah.
Well, the entire generation of lawmakers were guys that went to ConCon. I think Madigan did, I think Daley did. Marty Russo did. They had a constitutional convention in Illinois, for those that don't remember or weren't around. And, they were going to write a new constitution. Duh, hence the name. But somehow, Carl, and I don't know how the hell this came through with today's politics, the people who went to that could not have held ever like a government office. They demanded that people, just regular people, go write this thing. So if you were in any kind of office, elected or appointed, you were outcluded. So all these guys that were in their late 20s, early 30s, ran, and they had their name on people's front lawn, and they learned how to run. And obviously, once they got a taste of it, they became your new generation of lawmakers. I mean, like I said,
right.
I bet 100 of those guys became representatives or something afterwards. But anyway, Marty Russo, my buddy, said he got everything in trust. At that time, I think they made $25,000 as a rep. He says the dude needs two houses. One here and one there. He's got to find a place to stay. I mean, I need a house. He doesn't belong to Beverly like all the other people who join the law firm. Whenever he goes, he's a guest. He doesn't pick up a tab at dinner because he can't afford it. Because it's a horrible job at that level if you actually want to provide for your family or anything and don't want to cheat. Well, now, somehow or another, there must have been a sneaky rule or something. None of these guys have any of this stuff in trust. Cheney was trading Halliburton from the vice presidency, for God's sake.
And Pelosi has made an art form.
Well, no, they're different. Their art form is, I hate to blow back at the Carl because I never get a chance to do it. they're clever. It's always the wife or the husband that makes the dough.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's her husband that's, you know, but still, being clever still, you know, that's too cute by half, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, there's always, there's you know, the ethics rules don't really mean anything because we'll find a way around them. They always leave a loophole, and the people that write the rules do it on purpose. Duh, gee, I wonder why. And you know, and all of a sudden being a congressperson means that, you know, after 20 or 30 years, you have $100 million.
But think back to what you said earlier. Somehow or another, neither one of us were barking around this. We don't know when this changed. Because Adlai Stevenson, I don't know if you saw that or not, just died the other day. Adlai Stevenson was a terrific man. Adlai Stevenson III was a senator from Illinois. Amazingly well respected. Even Mike Royko hated all these people, said that he was the one guy that he would write papers himself on, like Social Security and things that nobody else would want to touch, and would present them to the rest of the people in Congress. He goes, he was could have been the best senator we or anybody had for a long time. Now, he didn't make a whole bunch of dough there. Paul Simon came back and what, he taught at Carbondale or something when he came back?
Yeah.
Chuck Percy didn't make money there. I don't think Adlai Stevenson, Dirksen, something seriously has changed.
I think this started after the Reagan era. And as we got into the Clinton years, and then as especially after we got through 2000, okay, in the tech wreck, it really accelerated, and it became something. You used to go into the government, at least at a federal level, because you had the fire in your belly. Now you go there because you want the money and the power. And you usually end up getting both.
Well, you want two things, Kyle. I think you either stay there, do whatever you have to do, co-opt yourself to hang in there, or you're like your buddy. Because I went to one of those Jewish, I was a guest at the Jewish big lobby for where they go after everybody. It's the Israeli American something something. I know the. But they claim that you have more turnaround in the first two or three terms in the people in the House than you've ever had. People get there and get disgusted and leave. Or you hang in there, get co-opted, and become rich. You either leave right away because you can't stand it or figure you're not accomplishing anything, or you pile in. Or am I wrong on that?
You're not wrong, and this is one of the things that's interesting, because I have worked with people who decided to run for Congress, with one person who decided to run for Congress and won a seat, and as soon as he got there, he was told, this is what's going to happen, and by the way, it starts with, hand over your cell phone, here's your officially issued replacement, oh, by the way, everything you do on this thing is recorded by the RNC. And if you don't agree, you get no committee assignments, you get nothing. I was going to go out there and put together a secure communications and document system for them that was the property of their office, period, end of discussion. Nope, can't do that. Was told, don't bother coming. And, so there you go. And that's the way it works. And he bucked it, and guess what? The next term, 2 years later, he gets primaried by a guy who is involved with the law firm, and all of a sudden there's more money than God that gets thrown at getting him thrown out of the seat. And it happened.
Hey, we only got a minute and a half. Real quick, since I want to talk about this a lot and we never got there, where is everybody? Everybody says you can't hire anybody. You claim there's 2 million people gone from the country. My Mexican people tell me, or my Hispanic group from, say, a lot of people either left Chicago that were the normal, you know, kitchen help and those kinds of things. They're either back in Mexico or in Tennessee and Florida. Where is everybody, Carl?
I think there's a very disturbing pattern showing up in excess mortality. Nobody's looking at it. Nobody wants to talk about it. It is not necessarily COVID, but public health is supposed to consider all things. When you do things that are wildly disruptive and you end up adding a huge number of people that overdose or get drunk or whatever, You want to know where they went? Well, that's where a big part of it was, especially on the lower end of the...
All right, Crowell, we're going to have to tee this up as a real number that we'll go over time here, but thank you. Have a nice weekend. Don't do anything I wouldn't do, as they say. SP Futures up 19, NASDAQ Futures up 67. Back on Monday, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Jerry, just remember, it's not a lie if you believe it.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.